No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So you can call in and be part of the conversation if you have a question at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to us. Maria is not with me tonight because her son Christopher got married yesterday. Yay, Christopher and Jamie. Best of luck to both of you. I'm sure you'll have a wonderful life together. And Maria is hosting a dinner for them tonight, so I'm sure she's being the great, gracious hostess. And she's going to be so sorry that she missed this show because we have an amazing guest tonight, Alan Lichtman. Dr. Lichtman got his PhD from Harvard University in 1973 with a specialty in modern American history and quantitative methods. He became an assistant professor of history at American University in 1973, a full professor in 1980, and a distinguished professor in 2011. He is the recipient of the Scholar Teacher of the Year Award for 1992 and 93. He has published 12 books and several hundred articles. It's hard for me to believe that. It must take all his time. He has lectured in the United States and across the world, and we're so excited to have him with us tonight. Thanks for being on the show, Dr. Lichtman. Welcome.
Looking forward to it.
So let me ask you, you say that now I've been a campaign person for 40 years. I've been working on Democratic campaigns, and you say we're doing it all wrong. So tell us, what do we need to be doing?
Yeah. My critique of conventional campaigning is based on my prediction system, which I'm sure we'll talk about, the keys to the White House, which has been correct in predicting presidential election results since I called Ronald Reagan's reelection in April 1982, 2.5 years ahead of time, and during what was then the worst recession since the Great Depression and when everyone was talking about a one-term president. And throughout my nigh on 40 years of predicting, about as long as you've been involved in grassroots politics, what I found is that elections turn on the record of the party holding the White House, and that conventional campaigning, get this, Mike, has zero predictive value for who's going to win elections. Therefore, we have an alternative to the soundbite-driven, attack-driven, dirty trick driven kind of campaigns we see these days. Instead, candidates should, if they want to campaign according to the keys to the White House, campaign to build a mandate for governing. That is, give us your specific and detailed vision. Tell us exactly what bills you're going to introduce in your first 100 days, what executive orders you are going to issue, the kinds of persons you're going to put in your cabinet, in your White House, on the judiciary. If you do that and you win, you'll be much better able to govern and your party will have a better chance to win again. And even if you lose, you will have left your mark because you will have expressed a vision that can inspire people. Who look at recent losing candidates. Who remembers anything they've said other than the gaffes? Mitt Romney, John McCain, John Kerry, nobody remembers them. We only remember the bold candidates, believe it or not, the ones who lost big, like Barry Goldwater and George McGovern, who actually said something and inspired generations.
Well, you know, I have always felt this since I've been involved, Dr. Lichtman. My first campaign was working for Jimmy Carter, getting him reelected. We didn't do a very good job at that. But
was
you
it
know,
your I, fault?
No, thank you. I appreciate that. But, you know, I've always thought, I don't know that people understand that there's two separate things here between campaigning and governing. I mean, a lot of times, you know, it's funny, you'll see somebody working on a campaign who just got off his job as a pizza delivery driver, and the candidate wins, and the next thing you know, he's appointed to a government job because he worked on the campaign, right? And
exactly.
What you lay out, I mean, oh my God, that would make politics in America so much better if candidates would do that. And it's amazing that they spend $2 billion plus now on campaigning to do exactly what you're saying is useless.
Soundbite. Right, campaigns that are forgotten the moment they're over.
Right. And you know, when I look at the campaign commercials that I see on TV today, I say to myself, these aren't swaying anybody. You know,
no.
The Trump commercials, the only people that like the Trump commercials are the people that were going to vote for him anyway, and vice versa. So I've always doubted this. Let me ask you something. I just found this unbelievable. There's a county, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Vigo County, Indiana, where
sure.
since 1888, these people have voted right in
yep.
every election except for two. So why don't we just go into Vigo County, Indiana, and poll every registered voter? Wouldn't that be more effective than spending hundreds of millions of dollars on polls? You say polls are just a snapshot of,
right.
you know, any particular moment in time. They really don't do us any good.
Do you ever see the great movie called Magic Town? I think it was a Jimmy Stewart movie that they found
uh-huh.
this one town called, you know, this obscure town that predicted everything. Everything that was done in that town predicted what was going on in the nation. That's kind of the magic county. But, you know, the reason, obviously, they don't do that. And the reason they don't just say, okay, Lichtman makes this prediction. It's based on history. Here it is. See you in 5 months. Can't do that. You know,
you
remember this. You and I are both old enough to remember it. Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address in 1961, when he warned against a military-industrial complex. Well, we have a political-industrial complex sustained by the same kind of iron triangle that sustains the military-industrial complex, although it's different players. One point is the pollsters, the handlers, the ad men, the hucksters, who make huge amounts of money with the notion that elections are won day to day by who's up and who's down, and they have to guide it. Two is the media, and they make all their money by covering the elections day by day. As I said, they just can't say, here's Lichtman's prediction, see you in 5 months. Then the final point on the iron triangle is the candidates who are afraid to go against the media pundits and the pollsters and the ad men. And I've been screaming about breaking this iron triangle for decades, and maybe you can help me. Haven't done it yet.
Well, I'll do my best. I haven't made it to state yet, so I don't. And I didn't get Jimmy Carter reelected, so I don't know. My resume will live up to being accepted by you. But let me ask you: you wrote on the rise of American conservatism, and you know, as a person that worked with Carter, I saw this happening, and we had Michael Steele on the show earlier during the primaries, you know, the former head of the Republican Party. And at the
good
time,
buddy of mine from Maryland, sure.
Great guy.
And
we asked him about Larry Hogan, because a lot of people were talking about the possibility of Larry Hogan running again, you know, in the primary against Trump.
Sure.
And he said, Larry Hogan can't run. and no other middle of the road Republican can run, because the Trump has taken over the Republican Party. The Trumpers have taken over the Republican Party, and there's absolutely no middle of the road candidate in the Republican Party that could win the primary. Do you think that's true? Have they taken over the Republican Party? And what does this mean if he loses the election?
Couldn't agree more with my friend Michael Steele. Here's what's happened. Donald Trump has, and I know about this because, as you said, I've written about it. My book won, was a finalist in all nonfiction books in America from the National Book Critics Circles Award. So here's what's happened. Every single principle that Republicans and conservatives have professed to stand for over the decades has been trashed by Donald Trump. Personal morality, personal responsibility, a joke. Respect for traditional institutions, states' rights, fiscal responsibility, limited government, gone. And so what are they left with? They are left with only Donald Trump, because they are utterly bereft of principle. This means if and when Donald Trump loses, the Republican Party will have a huge reckoning as to what it represents in a post-Trump world. Is it just a kind of a rump, pro-Trump, vestigial organization, or can it rebuild on real principles? The other problem the Republican Party has is this. You know, there's a poem which goes in part, birth, copulation, death. That's all there is when it comes down to brass tacks. In other words, look at demography. And the demography of the nation is running sharply against Republicans. We're going to be a minority nation in 20, 25 years. Texas, California are already majority minority, and we're seeing what's happening with the politics in Texas. Biden may not win this year, but Texas is heading from deep red to purple. Well, Republicans are running against the demographic tide, and that doesn't work. That's why you see them so furiously trying to suppress the votes of the rising Democratic base and minorities and young people, because the Republican base of older white guys is the most shrinking part of the electorate. And Republicans, even if Trump wins, are going to have to figure out how are they going to adapt to the changing demography of the country. Demography is going to change no matter what they do, and they're going to have to deal with it.
Well, you know, and this may be one of the things that are part of his legacy. I've got children in their mid to late 20s who have never been politically active before, and they're all politically active now. They're all going out to vote. So he's inspiring young people to get involved, and I don't know how well that bodes for the Republican Party. But let you and I get down to brass tacks. Let's talk about your 13 keys and what they mean, okay? I find some of them so interesting. Some of them I see as obvious. Scandal, for example. No sure. Scandal. Well, that's got to be a big one. That's got to be a big minus in this White House, right?
Of course.
No scandal.
Of course. Of course.
But some of them, like charismatic. Here we have, I heard you say in an interview with the New York Times that although Trump is charismatic, he's only charismatic to a very small group.
Exactly. Want to hear the story of how I got to the keys? It's a fascinating story. It's a great story. I'd love to tell you, I came up with the keys by years of brilliant contemplation. But if I were to tell you that, to quote the late, not so great Richard Nixon, that would be wrong. I came up with the keys entirely by accident. In 1981, I was a distinguished visiting scholar at Caltech in Pasadena, where all those mathematicians and physicists hang out. I could walk the campus for a day and not understand a word anyone was saying. But there I met the world's leading authority in earthquake prediction, Vladimir Kailas Borok, one of a handful of worldwide scientists who were members of both the U.S. and Soviet National Academies of Sciences. He was the head of the Institute of Pattern Recognition and Earthquake Prediction in Moscow. And he said to me, you and I are going to collaborate. And of course, being brilliant and foresightful, I said, no, we're not. You know, earthquakes may be a big deal here in Southern California. I got to go back to Washington, D.C. No one cares about earthquakes there. He said, no, no, I've already solved earthquakes, all right. He said, get this. This is amazing. He said in 1963, he was a member of the Soviet scientific delegation that came to Washington, D.C. under President Kennedy and negotiated the most important treaty by far in the history of the world, the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty that kept us from poisoning our atmosphere, our oceans, and our soil. And he said he fell in love with politics. But look, he said, I live in the Soviet Union, you know, predicting elections. Forget it. It's supreme leader or off with your head. But he said, you know all about American history, American politics, and the presidency. So we became the odd couple of political research. And we had two key insights that guided our work. One was to reconceptualize presidential elections in geophysical terms. Remember, this is 1981, not as Carter versus Reagan, not as Republican versus Democrat, not as liberal versus conservative, but as stability. The White House party keeps the White House. And earthquake, the White House party loses. And the second insight was to look at indicators not of the campaign, but of the strength and performance of the White House party governing, for the most part. Have we looked at every American presidential election from 1860, when Abe Lincoln was elected, to 1980, using the methods of pattern recognition to recognize factors associated with stability and earthquake. And it was that analysis that yielded the 13 keys to the White House, the key factors that determine election results, and our simple decision rule. If six or more keys go against the White House party, they are predicted losers. Six strikes and you're out. Any six, it's an unweighted, nonlinear system. So that is the strange way the keys for the White House arose.
Well, they work so well, and I don't know how you ever hooked up with a mathematician and a statistician, because I was a political science major as an undergraduate and a graduate. And I think I cried to get through graduate statistics. I think the professor felt sorry for me and gave me a pass. But anyway, you know, I found it interesting in this New York Times thing that I saw on you, that you've given the six keys. I hate to give this away in the middle of the show, but you've given the six keys, and it's very close, and you predict that Vice President Biden's going to win based on the keys. But I ask you, since one of those keys is foreign military success, and since you made this prediction a short time ago, has it changed the paradigm anyway, because he's just had these two successes in the Middle East where he's gotten two Arab countries to agree to normalize relations with Israel? Does that affect
A great question, and a lot of people have asked me about that. And first, let me explain the key, and then I'll deal with the treaty.
Okay.
The key is a very high threshold key. It's got to be a big, splashy, acclaimed success in the United States, like winning a war. I have only once called the key for a treaty since I've been predicting in 1982. And that was the monumental nuclear arms control treaty between the U.S. and the Soviets in Ronald Reagan's second term that got rid of those incredibly dangerous intermediate nuclear missiles in Europe that were on a hair trigger that could have started a nuclear war in 5 minutes. I did not turn the key for the 1994 treaty between Israel and Jordan, a much more important country than the Gulf states or Sudan. Finally, as I said, it has to be broadly acclaimed in the U.S. to meet the threshold of the key. And this treaty hasn't made a ripple in the United States. Right. Have you heard much
really
about
haven't.
It? Nowhere. It's not in the debates. It's not in the speeches. It's not in the rallies. It's nothing. Think of when Barack Obama engineered the killing of Osama bin Laden. That was everywhere, right? It's all over the news. It was all over the campaigns. No comparison.
Right. And I don't know why they haven't seen this, because just like what you said about Obama, when it was al-Baghdadi, they were pushing that like there was no tomorrow. But
disappeared.
Nobody's saying anything about this. Well, let me ask you something about the Gore prediction. You picked Gore, and he did win the popular vote. But after that, you changed something because you picked Trump on the basis of, you know, and he lost the popular vote. So what changed between Gore and Trump?
This is a very important question that goes to the heart of modern American politics. You know, people say, oh, you were wrong about 2000, because while you were right about the popular vote, Gore lost the Electoral College vote. Well, he lost the Electoral College vote because the election was stolen in Florida, which Bush won by 537 votes, and in a full and fair election, wouldn't have come close. I proved this in my 2001 report to the United States Commission on Civil Rights, where I proved how many tens of thousands of African-American votes, which are 95% Gore, were thrown out. A subsequent follow-up that I had nothing to do with by Professor Walter Mebane concluded that Al Gore should have won by 30,000 votes. So I came as close as possible as human being could, I think, to getting that election right. If I had predicted Bush, people would say, oh, you were wrong. Al Gore won the popular vote, and then Bush stole the election in Florida. So, you know, I think I was right as you could be. But it did alert me to something. This is really important, that we have now built into our politics something new, a built-in divergence between the popular vote and the Electoral College vote, for the simple reason that the Democrats could count on millions of extra popular votes in just two states, New York and California. It was about 2 million back in 2000. By 2012, it was 5 to 6 million. So when I first developed my system, you had to go all the way back to 1888 in a, you know, very strange election, where it was just a hair's breadth difference, a few tens of thousands of votes. But now you have this built-in divergence, which has greatly grown since 2000. That's why in 2016 and in 2020, I didn't say a word about the popular vote, because I knew it was useless. I simply talked about who would win the election. But this is a huge problem for our democracy. You know, we no longer have a nation governed by the consent of the governed, because you have this incredible bias of the Electoral College. You can very easily, as we've now had twice in the last five elections, the two diverging. You know, when the framers set up the Electoral College, it was about a 5-to-1 disparity between the most and least populous states. Now it's nearly a 71 disparity. So, you know, we're the world's oldest running democracy, and that's a great thing because we have strong traditions, but we're also saddled with some terrible 18th century obsolete institutions, the worst of which is the Electoral College.
Well, I hate to disagree with a professor from Harvard, but
people disagree with me all the time. Don't worry,
I think the worst political anachronism from those times is the fact that the people of the District of Columbia have no damn representation in the United States Congress. What do you think about that? What do you think? If you could just, we won't hold you to this prediction, but what do you think our chances are for statehood? I mean, why doesn't we get all up in arms when 1,200 people are disenfranchised in South Carolina who couldn't vote? And we should be upset about that.
We should.
But
yeah.
nobody seems to care about the fact that 720,000 taxpaying American citizens have no vote in either house of Congress. Do you think we got to wait for the climate to change, or why do you think nobody cares? Because it only affects us.
I agree with you. You know, I don't think it quite reaches the extent of the Electoral College. Maybe it's the second worst. Along, of course, another story about every state having two senators, but that's a whole other issue. I agree with you completely. You should have representation. You should be a regular senator with all the privileges and voting powers of a senator. I do think it's a real possibility, though. I do think, you know, if I'm right and Biden wins, I think the Democrats will take back the Senate. That will give Democrats uniform control over government in Washington for the first time since the first 2 years of the Obama administration. You couldn't get it through then because of the filibuster, but Democrats are talking about possibly eliminating the filibuster. If that happens, then indeed it doesn't require a constitutional amendment, just requires a vote of Congress. D.C. could become a state.
Right, and that's my new approach, is that I've decided we've set up a website called twomoredems.com, because, you know, I think we have to embrace our right. This is what the Republicans are afraid of, two more Democrats. And I'm out there saying, look what they did in the Supreme Court. They used their power to do that. If you can invoke the nuclear option, what better reason to invoke the nuclear option than to enfranchise almost a million people? So let's do it and say, hell yes. And then we put
let's bring in Puerto Rico.
And then you put something in it for every Democrat. Every Democrat has a vested interest in having two more Democrats. Nobody's got a vested interest in making D.C. a state now, except for, you know, the way we play it on the basis of you know, it's the right thing to do. Nobody has an interest in that except us. So we put something in it for other people. Let me ask you.
The Republicans don't complain about two Republicans from Wyoming, do they?
Right. No, they don't. And by the way, since you brought it up, I got more votes than the guy from Wyoming. So, I mean, it's just crazy. But let me ask you. You wrote about impeachment all the way from Andrew Johnson to Bill Clinton. And then you said that you thought Trump was headed that way. Was that before he was actually impeached?
It was before he was even elected. When I made my interview with the Washington Post in September 2016, when I predicted Trump's win, I also predicted that he would be impeached before he was even elected. Now, after the election, I did get this note which said, "Professor, congrats, good call, Donald J. Trump," in big Sharpie letters. It's right here in my study on my wall. But he's not much of a reader, is he? And he probably never got to my second big prediction, which is that he was going to be impeached. People thought I was nuts. How can you predict Donald Trump's going to be impeached before he even takes office, before he's even elected? And I said, the reason is I studied his entire 50-year career. The man never changes. And I have chapters called Lies, Lies, Lies. You know, what an inveterate liar he is. I have a chapter on flaunting the law. I have a chapter on the Russia connection and foreign conflicts of interest. I have a chapter on his war on women. So I was able to predict this, not with a system like the keys to the White House, but with deep historical study of the 50-year record of this guy.
Well, you know, given that, and given what we saw in Florida with the Gore election and the hanging chads and that, all that nonsense, If he loses the election, which you predicted, and I hope you're absolutely right, do you think this is going to end up in court for months? Is it going to be a battle in the court system, do you think, through him?
I don't. You don't. You know, that was a pretty unique situation in Florida in 2000 because, you know, after the suppression of the black vote and the throwing out of those ballots, there was a hair's breadth of difference between the two candidates. Plus, you know, Al Gore is a dear friend. I know him well. He blew it.
Yeah, he did blow it, right?
Oh, it was the first
war in history to lose Tennessee. And he didn't campaign in Tennessee. If he campaigned in Tennessee, he would have won. His father
Or if he let Clinton campaign in Arkansas. How about that?
Right. Or Clinton in
but
Arkansas.
But I'm talking about the recount. He blew the recount because he called for a recount only in a few selected counties. It was a long delay before they got to the full state recount. And by that time, it was too late. So that was a very special situation. I doubt. But, you know, anything can happen. But I doubt if this election is going to come down to a few hundred votes in a single state where the Supreme Court will have to decide it. If the Supreme Court does have to decide it, good luck, you Democrats.
Yeah, well, I worked on the Gore campaign, and I agree. He's a fine man. I didn't know him personally, but, you know,
great of course guy. I met him.
But a great guy. And you know what? That's part of our Achilles heel, isn't it, as Democrats, is that we're arrogant. Hillary Clinton went to Utah. She was going to win Utah, but she didn't go to Wisconsin. You know, I mean, that's part of our problems. We're always telling you, you know, we're always talking down to everybody and we think we know it all.
Biden doesn't do that. He's different. No. Yeah. He's not like that at all. Clinton was, Gore, that whole Clinton clique. And I know them all, and I like them all, but you're right. You know, they have this certain tendency of privilege and arrogance and entitlement that doesn't go over well.
Well, but now that you've explained your prediction for Trump's impeachment, I want you to think hard and send me some Powerball lottery numbers because it's up to $100 million. And I sure could. That's exactly the amount of money I need these days, $100 million. I think I'm running out of questions here. So let me ask you, what haven't I asked you that you'd like to say?
I think we really pretty well covered the waterfront. But let me say this. There's a lot at stake in this election. Look, my predictions are totally nonpartisan. You know, the hardest thing in being a forecaster, it's not knowing math, although you got no math. It's not knowing history, although you got no history. It's not knowing politics, or you got no politics. It's keeping your own personal political convictions out of it. Remember, my first call was Ronald Reagan. My most recent call, you know, for an election that's already happened was Donald Trump. And over time, going into 2020, I've called 4 Republicans and 5 Democrats. So my predictions are as impartial, non-political as you can get. They're predictions, not endorsements. That doesn't mean I don't have my own political views. And my own political views point to the fact that the conventional wisdom, for once, is right. This is the most consequential election in decades. And what is truly, I think, most important is something that's really been sadly underplayed in this campaign, climate change. It's been mentioned, but it's not been front and center. And the truth is, if you don't solve climate change, nothing else is going to matter because our survival and our well-being on this planet depends on dealing with climate change. You know, it's not a theory anymore. It's here. The West Coast is burning up. The South is getting battered with record storms. The Southwest is experiencing record heat and drought. The Midwest is being hit with derechos. We're going to have tens of millions of climate change migrants in the next 20 or 30 years, and who knows what we're going to deal with this. I'm very familiar with this because my wife, the brilliant political organizer, Karen Strickler, who led the campaign to codify Roe versus Wade in Maryland back in the 1990s. So Maryland women are protected. She heads the only political action committee dedicated to electing climate heroes to the Senate and the House. And they produced the world's only climate guide to federal elections, which includes climate scores, not just for incumbents, but for challengers and open seat elections. That's unprecedented. VoteClimatePact.org, get the voter's guide. It's completely nonpartisan. So if we don't deal with climate change, nothing else that really matters. And Trump is the denier. He's not only stopped progress on climate change, he's turned us backwards. And another 4 years, it's going to be too late. The other thing that I think is of grave importance is our democracy. You know, Trump wants to be Vladimir Putin. He wants to be an autocrat. You know, he said totally falsely that Article 2 of the Constitution lets him do anything he wants. That is Putin. He's attacked viciously the free press, an essential component of a democracy. He's destroyed checks and balances by stonewalling all congressional oversight, and he's vastly abused the presidential power to issue executive orders, and he's politicized the Department of Justice and the entire federal government. So democracy is on the ballot. And of course, this has been discussed at great length. I'm not going to go into it. Healthcare is on the ballot as well. So I do think this is an incredibly consequential election, and I thank you for a great show.
Yeah, and you know what? I agree with you 100%. And I just want to add that I've been a keynote speaker at two international conferences, one in Portugal and one in India, in the last 18 months. And that was the main issue from every person. There were people from over 70 countries at one of those conferences. And it was climate change, climate change, climate change. That's what everybody cared about. So do me a favor, give your wife's website one more time.
VoteClimatePact.org.
Okay, people, VoteClimatePact.org. And tell us, before you leave us, tell us what you're doing these days. Are you still teaching at AU?
I'm 73. I still run 3 miles a day. I don't run the steeplechase anymore, although at one time I was North American age group steeplechase champion. But
I put my money on you anytime. Go ahead.
And I still teach at American University, but I only teach virtually. Being 73 and 18-year cancer survivor, I'm in the danger zone. I teach virtually, and I have to tell you, it works out fine. It's not as good as in person, but it's fine. The students, you know, maybe it's not so good for lower levels, but, you know, at the university level, it works.
Yeah, well, it would have worked for me because I remember falling asleep in a lot of lecture classes. And I couldn't just
in my class. You would never fall asleep in my class.
No, I'm sure that's true. But Dr. Lichtman, we promised that we'd give you 40. You know, I know you have other important things to do, so you've been on the show with us. With me for 40 minutes, and I very much appreciate it. And I hope you come back once your prediction comes true. You'll come back sometime and talk to us again. But we so much appreciate you having you on the show, and I wish you all the continued success. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Good night.
Good night. Well, you heard it, folks. You heard it here first. Joe Biden, you don't have to listen to CNN. You can just listen to me. Joe Biden has been predicted by Alan Lichtman, who has been right every time since Ronald Reagan. So that's a long history of predictions that have all come true. Now that we have a few minutes left, we still have 15 minutes. Let me just add to what Dr. Lichtman was saying at the end of his time on the show. This is a really, really important election. There are many things on the ballot that are important. And you heard Dr. Lichtman tell you that climate change was certainly important. And you have a man in the White House now that is a climate denier. Now, I've been on the internet lately arguing with people on Facebook about who's a better choice, Joe Biden or Donald Trump. But the truth of the matter is that on this important issue of climate change, the president has really let America down. He's withdrawn from the Paris Climate Accords. This is, look, you don't need to be a scientist to understand that that was the wrong thing to do. We've got countries all over the world who have condemned us for withdrawing from a cooperative agreement to make the climate better. And this is a problem. You know, this man wants to stand up there and tell you America first, but this is a problem that America cannot solve. We cannot solve it. It has to be, we have to get together with all the countries of the world to solve global climate change. There's no other way to do it. And not only did he withdraw from the climate accords, but in the Paris Climate Accord, but he pushed things like clean coal and oil. These are things that pollute our environment. I know that Joe Biden has taken some heat for saying he's against fracking. And really, I think what he means is that he'd like to see us scale back on those types of technologies and push things like solar. And, you know, it wasn't the smartest political thing to say when you need to win Pennsylvania. But I think it's the right approach. Yeah, we've got to put more electric cars on the road. We've got to use more solar, wind, and water power. We've got to convert to clean sources of energy, or we're going to be, not us, but our children are going to be in dire straits. And you know what? On top of all of it, there are millions of jobs that are available out there. I just want to give you one little incident. My brother runs a college, or did run a college. He's now stepped down as president in Ohio. And what they did was they put together the largest solar field in America, and they used his community college to train people on how to put the solar panels in. They put all the solar panels in with students. So they not only got this solar field, they not only got solar energy, they got hundreds of students, or dozens of students. I don't know how many people went through the program, to be honest, but many students trained in good paying jobs, which they could go out and use to make a better life for themselves, as well as a better life for all of us by providing more solar energy. So these are the kind of things that we need to do. And Donald Trump has already said he's not going to do them. He's not going to do them. He's a climate change denier, and that's just wrong. Another thing which Professor Lichtman brought up but said has been talked ad nauseum, which is true, I think, is health care. We need decent health care. Pre-existing conditions are important. Let me again give you an incident from my life. Give you an example from my life. My mother was covered by an insurance company called Blue Cross Blue Shield. And she left her job and went to another job where she was covered by the same insurance company, Blue Cross Blue Shield. But in the 1 month interim or 2 month interim, whatever the waiting period was for her to switch from one job to another on her insurance, they said she got breast cancer because she wasn't diagnosed for breast cancer until she moved to the second job. They canceled all of her benefits. They didn't pay one bit of her hospitalization. It left my sister, when she died 2 years later, it left my sister, my brother, and I in poverty. We didn't have a house. We didn't have a car. We had everything repossessed because none of her doctor's bills were covered. So if you think that pre-existing conditions is not something that you need to worry about, you're wrong. And these people, the Republicans, have time and time again attacked that. So understand who you're voting for. If you want Donald Trump, that's your choice. You're an American. You have every right to vote for him. But understand what you're doing. And it's not only that, climate change and health care, but it's also our position in the world. You heard me tell Dr. Lichtman that I have been the keynote speaker at two international conferences, one in Portugal, where for the last 2 years, actually the last 3 years in a row, we did this virtually this year, but the prior 2 years were in Portugal. I can tell you that we're a joke internationally. People at the conference, all they wanted to talk about was what a buffoon Donald Trump was. They didn't want to talk about any of our policies. They didn't want to talk about where our country was headed. They just wanted to know how this man became the president of the United States and what he was doing internationally, why he looked so ridiculous embracing people like Putin and the dictator in North Korea. They really wanted to, they really didn't understand. And the same thing in India. In India, they have a man that's just like Donald Trump in a lot of ways. His name is Modi. And he also rode on a kind of wave of populism, and he wants to turn the entire country back to a Hindu religious government. And he's already violated the civil rights of millions and millions of Muslims in his country. Muslims are the minority in India, but they still make up tens of millions of people, 100 million people plus, because India has such a large population. And in India, that's all they wanted to talk about. How did we end up with Donald Trump? We really were internationally what Ronald Reagan said we were, the shining light on the hill. But we are no more that shining light on internationally. People have looked to the United States for a very long time for guidance and for inspiration, and that no longer exists, I can tell you. And, you know, militarily, this man wears a little flag on his lapel, and he stands up there and he says, God bless America, but then he calls our military losers and fools. I mean, it's losers and suckers. A commander-in-chief that calls the army, the armed forces of America, losers and suckers is not fit to be the commander-in-chief. There is so much at stake in this election, in the direction that our country takes. Joe Biden has been in Washington for 46 years, 47 years. And I hear him criticized because they call the Washington, D.C. the swamp, and they say Joe's been there for 47 years and done nothing. And that's a lie. He's done many things. And let me also point out to you, besides the crime bill is one of them, and there were mistakes in the crime bill. And unlike the president, he stood up and recognized those mistakes and apologized for them and made things better. He's made things better for women. I don't even want to go into what Donald Trump thinks of women. I'm not sure how anybody who's a woman can vote for Donald Trump, given the things that he said and he's done to women. But, one thing that people have to understand when they make this criticism of Biden, that he's been in office for 47 years, is that over the last 47 years, the Republicans have controlled the government in America more than the Democrats. They've been in the White House more than the Democrats. They've been in both control of houses of each House of Congress more than the Democrats, and that they're accusing Joe Biden of destroying Washington, D.C., and what's going on in Washington, and not being able to address the concerns of Americans over the last 47 years when they've actually been in control. And this is the problem. There's a false narrative out there. They're trying to tell you that Donald Trump is, he's going to make America great again. This man has done nothing but degrade our country. And it's time to stand up. And I believe the American citizens will do this. And I believe that Dr. Lichtman's right. I predict on my show tonight that the next president of the United States will be Joe Biden. And, we have to stand up and be counted, because America has always been a great country. And hiding behind a wall is not going to make us great. And disparaging people that are not like us is not going to make us great. It's time for America to stand up and show exactly who we are. Joe Biden's been saying on the campaign trail lately that we can make a better America. And I believe that we can. But we have to work together. And I hear what people are saying about Donald Trump. Look, I've been a Democrat for 40 years, and I'll take responsibility for talking down to America. I'll take responsibility for making it sound like I know what's going on and you don't know what's going on. That's a problem that Democrats have had, and it's something that we have to address. But this man, just because he spits in the eye of politicians and he works outside the box, that's not enough to run the greatest country in the world. You've got to have more on the table than that. And let me tell you something. He has to go. That's the final word. We've got to get rid of him. You've got 2 days to do it. Please go out and vote. Every single person, go out and vote. I don't care if if you want to vote for Trump, that's your choice. You're an American citizen. But vote, 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 vote. It's the way we feed our democracy. And it's never been more important than it is right now. So once again, let me say thank you, Dr. Lichtman, for being on the show, because we're running out of time. Congratulations to Christopher and Jamie on their wedding. Maria, we miss you, and we'll see you next week when we really will find out whether Dr. Lichtman was right or not. And tonight, we leave you with a song. We always leave you with a song. And Dr. Lichtman left us early, so we're gonna dedicate this song to Donald Trump. This is the Rolling Stones, Out of Time. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Give the people their right to vote.